Welcome. For those of you who are are working for the certificate to this and you need the completion card signed, if you didn't bring yours, I didn't bring them either. But what we've worked out is that you can leave it for me, like when you come back and you have that completion card and you need me to sign it, you can put it, there's these mailboxes in the back if you go straight out towards that back door on the left, and I don't have a box, but there's one for Donna Cease, S-E-E-S-E, and I will email her and let her know that there's several people who are going to leave cards there. And then you can email me and let me know. I know there's two people who are going to do that. Are there other people who need to do that as well? Okay, three. Because I need to know how many. I don't want to come in each day and sign one. So there's three. Do you have yours with you? Okay, so you. Yeah, nobody's remembering. So you're in good company. And I forgot. So if you want me to sign it, then next time you're here, just put it in Donna Cease's box, okay? Or email me, and we'll figure it out. You can always email me, but I'll know to be on the lookout for about roughly four. Okay, so we got that business done. Before we start, I just want you to know, this has been kind of a weird day, and I left work early so I could go all the way out to Lake Wheeler to this bait shop and get a bunch of worms and crickets, right? But the traffic was really bad, and I couldn't get out of work early enough, and I thought, okay, I think at Lake Johnson there's a bait shop. Well, it's a vending machine, and it costs a lot for some worms, much more than where I go to this place at Lake Wheeler, and I just scoop out all these crickets, you know, and you can get all these things. So I put my money in, lost some money, put some more money in, like $5, and $5 in this. The big thing of worms wouldn't come out of the vending machine, but the little one did, and I lost some money. I thought, okay, that's as many worms as I'm going to get today. Hopefully they're alive. It's a refrigerated thing. And, you know, it's a thought that counts. We will all have, I think there's like maybe 40 in here. I don't feel them moving, but we will at the end we'll get to take them outside and release them. Okay, so let's just start by setting our intention and our motivation. So get in a comfortable position. By now you should know the meditative posture. Is there anybody here tonight for the very first time? Well, you get to take a test. Okay, well, this is our test night. So, but we're not everybody's taking the test. Some of us are helping others, so you can be a helper. All right, so just get in your comfortable position. If you're sitting, your feet should be uncrossed and on the floor. And if you're, again, you know, on a cushion, remember the most important thing is that your back is as straight as it can be, like coins stacked, balanced on top of each other without too much arching or slouching. Your arms are away from your sides. If you want, bring one hand below your navel and the right palm on top of that and gently touch your thumbs together so there's a nice little circle there. And you tuck your chin a little bit so that the back of your neck is straight. Put your tongue at the back of your teeth so your jaw is not clenched. And your eyes should be just gently closed so there's a little bit of light coming in, keeping you alert. And then all your attention goes onto the breath, either the sensation of your abdomen rising and falling or the feeling of the air going in and out of your nostrils. And as you bring all of your awareness there, try to let go of everything else that's been going on around you, inside of you, all the thoughts of what's happened, what's going to happen, what you did or should do. Just let it all drop away. And each cycle of an inhalation and exhalation is counted one. So I'm going to be quiet in a minute so you can, to yourself, count to 10. And if you lose track of your count, just come back, start over. I will end it in a couple of minutes. And you'll find that your mind will get bored pretty quickly and start to move off to something. And if you can notice it then and gently bring it back to your breath and be happy that you noticed it move away, no matter how long it took you to notice, you noticed. and you're building that ability to concentrate every time you bring your breath and your mind back to your breath. And sometimes you can even feel the thought arising like a wave rising up, and then you can just watch it settle down. Okay, so now count each inhalation and exhalation up to 10. So then with a calmer mind, we're going to set our intention for our work tonight, our practice. We set our intention before anything we do. It directs all of those activities. And so first bring your thoughts to why you're here tonight in particular. The effort it took you to come. All the work you've put into this class. And then in Buddhism, we try to increase that motivation to include as many other people as possible. Knowing that as our mind is calmer and happier, more kind, all the people around us will benefit as well. And try to bring your awareness to your own consciousness, your own mind. Try to feel how fluid it is, how constantly changing. That the opinion you held about something 4 years ago has changed. Doesn't mean that wasn't you then, and it doesn't mean it's not you now, but your mind is that river we've been talking about, constantly moving, changing, growing. And you are the keeper of it. And then in your mind, recall the benefits for practicing and meditating on this topic of death and rebirth. What are the benefits for you? How is this helpful? All of our practices should be something that help us and others, not make us frightened. Okay, so first order of business is to get the testing out of the way. I really congratulate and applaud all of you who came tonight, whether you're taking the test or not. A lot of people who are not taking the test don't come, and then, you know, the test only takes a little bit of time. And I can't imagine any of you really flubbing the test. So, you know, there are two choices of things to memorize. And even as you're reciting it to somebody, you're not going to have to get in front of the class. I'm going to partner you up. Your partner should let you, you know, it might take you a while. You might go through it and then go, oh, I forgot one. Okay, so if you're the listener, let the person go all the way through. And then you, or if they're really stuck and they say, I need some help, then give them that help. That's, you know, just what happens when we memorize. We sometimes don't recall it all perfectly. And if you really choke, then let me know. I can come and kind of give you a little nudge. But I don't think so. So there was two different things for people to memorize. One was, and you had your choice. So one was the 9-point death meditation, and one was the death dissolution state. So the death dissolution states, how many people are planning to recite that one? That one? Okay. Who else? Okay, and who's planning on reciting the 9-point one? Okay. So I need 4 people to come up and take, well, I need 5 people to come up here who are going to be testers. I mean, not taking the test, but who are going to help me. Those are the easy things to do, guys. I should. Okay, so. All right, so here's that. Here's that. I'm going to give you a different one. Okay, Susan, just wait. I'm going to give you a different one. Okay, here. Okay, so just have a seat, and I'll pair you up in a second. Now, Susan, I need you to come here because I'm going to give you the death dissolution one because you've done it enough that I think you'll understand my chart. So he's going to recite it, so just make sure it, some of, you know, it doesn't have to be exactly like this because the way that we did it was a little bit differently. So just make sure that most of those are covered. Mm-hmm. And then this one.
Mm-hmm. Same way.
Right, same way. Until you get to here, then it's just these colors.
Oh.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. So now if you're at home, hi, folks at home. If you're taking the test at home or want to try this at home, you can try this at home. You can try this at home. Yeah. So, you know, just now while everybody's doing the test, you can review one of those and try to do it yourself because this isn't going to take that long. Okay, so now people with the papers pair up with, and the other folks who are going to do the 9-point, raise your hands. The people with the papers go and pair up with one of them and go off somewhere, okay? You can go off into another room. And those of you who aren't doing anything, okay, so you can turn around. That guy's behind you. He needs a tester. Okay, he's doing a test. Who else needs a test? Who's taking the test? You're taking the test? Okay, you can pair up with him. Everybody now got a tester? Paper person with paper? Okay, so you can go anywhere you want, and I would say it probably will take about 5-10 minutes, and the rest of you can just meditate on death.
Do you have the other one, too?
Okay. He's not. So you can keep that if you want.
I already have a copy.
Okay.
Thank you.
You want another copy? Thinking of the worms?
Like probably feeding the birds or whatever.
Well, right, then it's we're not involved in killing them, so, or a person isn't, yeah, but that's a good question. We'll bring that up when we talk about it, because I have a story about that. seriously. Because you took the hardest one. Nobody even tried to do that one, so. It wasn't hard. See? It wasn't that hard, guys. This is the next one to meditate, to memorize. Anyway, everybody, great. Thank you. All of us, I should be having this on. Yeah, awesome. I'm really, really thrilled that you all memorized that and gave it that a shot. That's awesome. So anybody else who wants to do it, you can do that, you know, and then it's yours. You know, you carry it around all the time. You just refresh it. And when you refresh it, then, you know, I remember because Geshe-la would tell me to memorize different things, and I was really resistant to it for a long time. Like, oh, it's here. It's written on a piece of paper. I don't need to memorize it. But it did change when I memorized it. It really felt like it was mine. I could excuse me, pull it up no matter where I was, you know, on a bus, whatever. And I would get really nervous before I'd have to recite it. I would have the thing memorized completely. And as soon as I had to recite it, it was like it just completely vanished from my mind. Maybe I get one line out. That's just a really common experience, and it's just kind of nerves. And once you get into it, the problem, I think the greater problem is I would memorize things. I could say them without even thinking of what I'd said. Like I got to the end and didn't even pay any attention. So there's that problem. But so anyway, congratulations, and thanks for doing that. Geshe-la will definitely ask me, I'm sure, tonight. He'll call me and said, so, did you? Oh, yeah. Did anybody memorize it? Anyway, he often asks me, how many people are in class? He thinks the DB class is very, very important, and so he's thrilled to know that people are trying. Okay, so a couple of other things to go over before we go outside with the worms. First of all, anything that you all have come up against in the last week or so or that you want to touch base on or about before this module ends? Make sure we have time for it tonight. Feeling pretty good? Okay. The one thing we didn't really get to cover, but it's in a lot of the literature, everything, you know, that you have to read, are the five forces. Does that ring a bell? Hearing about the five forces? Okay. And you know, if you want to read more on them, they're in every Lamrim text that is out there. They're probably in, I'm sure they're in that book that I recommended you all read, The Five Forces. You'll see them listed in different ways and written in different ways. And there's five forces that people practice throughout their lifetime. They're kind of like the Lamrim, basically, is this little condensed version that you can remember. And then they say there's five forces at the time of death, which are similar to the five forces that you practice throughout your lifetime. So let me start with the five forces that you're practicing throughout your lifetime. Motivation. which is meaning, you know, as we talked about in the meditation this morning, this morning, 10 minutes ago, that you're always trying to be aware of your motivation. Motivation is important in all of your actions, not just in Buddhist ideas, but, you know, if you commit a crime, they're going to want to know what the motivation was, right? The police are looking at motive. I mean, motivation is a really important part of all of our actions. If you sign up at a gym and you're going to do some workout, having a goal and a motivation, it's not something unique is what I'm trying to say. It's part of our everyday understanding. But we try to expand it when we're talking about our practice to include as many people as possible and to make it the most compassionate motivation available to us. Then the next one is aspiration. So to have the greatest wish, you know, that you're aspiring for the highest enlightenment possible in all your actions. And, you know, in general, that's the course of your life, right? Then white seed, in the first five forces that I'm talking about, white seed, you'll hear that mentioned. And that's prayers. That's saying prayers. And, of course, there's a big overlap between all of these, right? But there's lots of prayers. Mantras, wishes, those are all considered white seed. And then one other one is often labeled destruction. What they're saying you're destroying is your selfishness, the part of us that is always just looking out for ourselves, trying to destroy that and identifying how that gets in the way, how it causes problems. It's not self-preservation that causes problems. It's that selfishness of me first that causes problems, trying to destroy that, eliminate that. And then dedication, so dedicating our good deeds. Those are the five forces throughout our life. And then there's five forces at the time of death. So if you know you're dying, it's not the sudden death that we've been talking about or, you know, a murder, all those kinds of deaths. It's, you know you're going to die. So then I have like three different ways they're written in different books. Probably the easiest way is there's familiarity. I mean, they're almost the same, but just a little bit different because now time is more of an essence. Familiarity. Determination to continue practicing in the rest of your life that you have and in all future lives and in the Bardo state. So that aspiration still to continue practicing bodhicitta. Then they also say white seed. And the one way that I read that white seed means at the time of death is detaching from your possessions, your family, your attachment, not your love. Okay, it's not about letting go of love. It's about letting go of the attachment that we know creates pain for us and other people. And so kind of remembering how does attachment create pain? It's not love. You know, actually, the more you can eliminate attachment, the greater the love. And then that all the things that you own and are, you're mentally offering them. And remind me to tell you how we can do all these while we're alive. We can practice this all the time. And then, so I've done what? Familiarity, determination, white seed. Again, trying to destroy self-cherishing. But again, it's just the timeline has moved up a little bit. So even in your illness, you can try to use your illness as a way of destroying your selfishness. And then the force of prayer. And the prayer is, you know, to never be separated from bodhicitta, to always be, to carry that wish with you everywhere you're going. So I read somewhere, I guess it was Lama Zopa, he said, you know, if you can't remember all of these, just remember bodhicitta, because that's basically at the root of all this, making that wish, making that aspiration, being determined, making those prayers, and then letting go of the possessions that might get in the way as you finally die.
Can you repeat number five of the last one again?
What was that?
Force of prayer,
yeah. So in particular, you know, dedicating. So you would be thinking of the positive things that you've accomplished. You wouldn't be sitting, I mean, the worry that all the teachers talk about is that at the time of death you would just be filled with regret. So what you're trying to do instead is, you know, you've purified as much as you can in this lifetime. You'll feel if you've done, had a good practice and a good life, then when that moment comes, you feel like, look, I've done what I can do. Of course, we've made mistakes, but now you're focusing on what you did do, and you'll dedicate all that you have accomplished towards what? Towards your goal, you know, of continuing on with bodhicitta, your practice, helping others. And these are things that we don't have to wait to do, so we can practice what it means to mentally offer. You know, so at the time of death, we are trying to give away our possessions, but also mentally offering everything that we have that's good, mentally offering that. So I know when Geshe-la and all the monks were staying in my house, these were some of the newer monks who hadn't been to this country, and I'd take them like to Harris Teeter, which I didn't think, we were just shopping. It wasn't like a field trip, but they would just stand there and kind of mentally offer all that food because they never seen so much food in one place. Same thing like when I go to K&W cafeteria, you know, this whole tray of hot food, and it was just like amazing to them. So they would tell me they were mentally offering this to all beings on earth, but all the holy beings, you know, as well. So we can go ahead and do that. Sometimes I just try, like, get in bed at night, and I think about how many people don't have what I have, a bed, and just try to, not to make me feel worse about it, but to make me appreciate that, but also to mentally offer it. I wish that everyone could. So the more I can increase my wishes for others, the more that helps my mind stream, and it's not going to hurt anybody else. It prepares me then to be able to be of more help. So I remember this one teacher saying, the whole point of prayer is that you become the same thing as that prayer, that your life and the prayer are the same thing. So there's plenty of chances to do that. There's plenty of chances to try to destroy and eliminate our selfishness. If we see it as the real enemy, that's what's keeping us stuck in cyclic existence, is our selfishness, our self-grasping, that there's lots of things that we can do to reduce it. And, tons. It's just a matter of trying to catch it before it's too big, before it's risen up so much in our day that it's kind of out of our control, but using it like, oh, here's a chance to expand my patience. So I did ask Geshe-la, somebody had a question here. Oh, all the questions last time about, okay, what if, you know, somebody's shooting me, right? Remember those questions last time? You weren't here. So we were talking a lot about different death situations, and we were going to the most extreme, you know, like, okay, so what if, you know, somebody's killing me right this second, what do I do? And I think your question more was like, if I'm fighting back, am I creating a negative mind state, right? And so Geshe-la kind of confirmed what I said is, you know, if you can get out of that situation, you have to hit somebody in the nose, do it. Whatever you have to do, do it. I said, you know, it's really hard to know because there's so many different particulars that could rise up. But certainly if there's a situation and you know that you need to fight back and you can get out of there, do it. If you can't, then, you know, get your mind kind of as calm as possible. Does that make sense? I mean, without the very specific details, it's hard to say. But if there's something you can do, then you should do it to get out of that situation. Now, I said, you know, I know when I say that, Geshe-la, there's going to be all these other, well, what if this and what if that? And he said, okay, probably most people should practice with a telemarketer first. I said, what? He said, because there's so many situations all day long that challenge us and challenge us to lose our patience. These are the things that we're dealing with, you know, 24/7. And that's not an unlikely scenario for us to be managing. You know what I'm saying? The challenges of us losing our patience all day long are there constantly. And if we can work with those and keep a calm mind, that's just going to help our mind expand more and more to become the most patient person in the state, right? We have that opportunity every single day. We don't know what's going to be happening at the moment of our death. We just don't know. So what we can do, though, is use everything we've got around us to become more and more patient, more kind, increase that capacity. And then, you know, we'll see. Yeah.
So if you can fight back?
Sure. Yeah.
Deadly force?
That's what I said, Geshe-la. There's going to be a question I'm not sure how to answer, you know. you know, so much again comes to the mind at the time of the action, right? So if I'm fighting back against somebody who's trying to kill me, I may not have in my mind that I'm going to kill them, right? I'm fighting for my life. I'm trying to get out of there. It may end up that I push them down and then they die, right? That's manslaughter, basically. That's not me. I didn't go out and intend to murder them. If I get the gun away from them and then I shoot them, I mean, there's all these gray areas that I really can't say, except if you have the opportunity not to kill, certainly don't kill, you know. But you would also, in most of those kinds of situations, you really don't know that, what am I trying to say? In most of those kinds of situations, I mean, when I took and taught self-defense, the first thing is run. If you can get away, get away. You don't have to stick around. That's what you're trying to create, distance between you and the attacker. And everything in self-defense is to create that distance and to be as ready to run. And then there's all these scenarios that we just don't know about. If you're able to get out and push the other person, disable the other person in some way so that you can move and run, do it. In that process, if you're harming them, you know, if you have a choice, then don't harm them. I guess that's as clear as I can get. You know, you've created distance between yourself and them, and now you can get away. Do it. Yeah, I guess that's as good as I can do on that answer. You wouldn't want to be in a scenario where you're choosing to, like, okay, now I push them down, now I'm going to shoot them. Yeah.
We've been reading a lot about precious human rebirth and how it's very rare. I do remember in the CD, some of the readings, Lama Yeshe mentioned that to stay out of the lower realms, some bodhicitta and loving kindness is enough. But, I mean, what's your take on that? I mean, it's very rare to be reborn as a human, but how much Dharma practice is necessary to come back?
Mm-hmm.
As a human and not come back to that or in the lower realms?
Mm-hmm. Well, there's a couple of things. One, when they say precious human rebirth, it's more than just being born human. It's being born with all the conditions that we all have in this room to be able to practice. You know, we're not born in a country where there's so much poverty or so much war that we don't have the opportunity to sit and practice. We're not mentally ill and deranged. I mean, we can sit and think about these things. So there's all these conditions that mean that we have a perfect human rebirth. So that's one thing. So then the thing that I like to also think about this is this not just some random accident that we have all come across these teachings. So I used to really worry that I'll never, if you know, in the next life I'll never have this kind of opportunity because it seems so miraculous that I had stumbled across. I wasn't like some little Tibetan girl who then gets put in a monastery, and you know, it wasn't like that. And it seems like a fluke, this incredible fluke that I stumbled across this, and not only that, but the right place, and then not only that, but then Geshe-la came, and not only that, but he lived in my house for 9 years. So, but what I started to see as I started to study more and more was, no, that's not a fluke, that I created the causes for that all to happen. And so now you are creating the causes, or you have the opportunity to create the causes to certainly be born again as a human with a perfect human rebirth and studying Dharma. That is all within our control. And the five forces that I just mentioned are your five guarantees. The ten non-virtues are just like the Ten Commandments. I mean, they're so similar. In practicing those means that you are not going to create the causes to be born in lower realms, that you are creating the causes to be human again. And so every time you dedicate, you know, then you're making you're just like sealing the deal when you dedicate. So at the end of every day, when you think about the positive things you did, then you're dedicating that the merit, the energy from those positive actions continue to propel you on the path that you're on. And then it's not a fluke, you know. Is that an answer?
Yes.
Okay. Thanks. Anybody else? Yeah.
Could you expand on
sure. Yeah. Well, Lama Zopa was describing it as having a plan, having a strong wish and plan that you will never be separated from bodhicitta. That's why I say a lot of these overlap. You know, it's very similar to prayer, but prayer is there are real prayers that you would be saying and repeating that other people have said. But this is more about your own attitude and being so familiar with that wish that it's not something you've got to, like, sit down and, like, yeah, right. It's so familiar, that wish.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Anybody else? So we've got a couple of guys here waiting for us, some of them in there. So let's talk a little bit about what we're doing with this before we go out there. Which I really hope they're alive. I hope there's some in there. Okay. All right. We'll wait. They're probably just also very, they were cold. Now they're warmed up. So anybody got any questions about this? About what we're doing with these worms? So they have consciousness. Did anybody see 7 Years in Tibet? That movie? Did you? Yeah. Do you remember the scene where, if you haven't seen it, it's a great movie to rent. And there's a scene where, the guy, Henrik, is there and His Holiness wants him to build a, is it a movie theater for him? Yeah. So he's out in the backyard with other Tibetans, you know, digging the foundation or whatever. And the local people are all upset because they're cutting worms as they're digging. And the young Dalai Lama is explaining to Henrik why this is upsetting to them, you know, and that this basically is consciousness. This is a mind. It doesn't mean it's the same as ours, obviously, but it's consciousness. And so every consciousness carries a seed, that potential. And this consciousness is going somewhere. So, you know, rescuing something from a certain death creates the causes for our longevity, but also our perfect human rebirth. We are doing the opposite of killing. We're saving a life. So you were asking me, like, okay, so are we just kind of feeding the worms? Because we're going to be... Now, if we put this in a bird feeder, that would not be good. But we're putting them back where their life is, in dirt. And they were definitely bound for a hook. So... that would have been a very, you know, we would have been connected with that act. Not we, but whoever puts them on the hook, then they are connected with that action of killing, right? We are connected with the action of putting them back in the ground, of saving their life. When we do this, then we try to make a strong wish for them. That, and what would the wish be? What are some things that we could wish for them? What? Yeah. That they are able to, well, we have ours, but also that we're, that they can have a chance to generate wisdom and compassion. In some point, that little mind stream in there doesn't end. And, you know, where in the world is it going? And as it moves on, may it be able to generate wisdom and compassion. May it have a perfect human rebirth. And, you know, it's an amazing, it's also not a fluke that whoever is in here, whichever, however many are in here, we're connected to. So this is the way that we talk about our act. I mean, karma just means actions. And so our actions of body, speech, and mind are so important. It's like there's a blank canvas, and everything we're saying, thinking, and doing are creations on that canvas. And so now, you know, our canvas and their canvas is connected. And by us making that wish, it's just, it's so amazing, it's hard to even put into words. There was something else I really wanted to say about that. Okay, and so then the stupa outside. This used to really trip me up, you know, stupas and, you know, how is this going to help? And I got all confused with the whole idea of emptiness. But I would tell Geshe-la, but I thought there's not, that something doesn't have inherent power. right? So you see the prayer flags, and going under the prayer flags is supposed to be beneficial. But I thought that it's not, the power isn't inherently in those objects. And he said, you're right. They're not inherently in those objects. But the minds that are connected with those, that have created those, the countless minds that have said those mantras, that's all connected. And so then that consciousness and our consciousness is kind of coming together. So the stupa outside is filled with all kinds of holy objects. Why are they holy? They're not inherently holy. They didn't drop out of the sky holy. They were created by the actions of other beings. And that's what, that's that continuation, you know, the kind of spiraling through something can create something as holy. That, I love that idea. And so then us taking these and physically going around this object, which is filled with these holy objects, all created by mind, has power and benefit. There was something else I wanted to say about consciousness, but anyway, it's just, to me, it's pretty phenomenal, you know, the ones that you pick out then. So they're also creating, I mean, I know Geshe would say this to me, they are now creating incredible merit by being the cause for us to walk around the stupa. So they're gaining all of that merit. And then they're going to live, and hopefully there's something planted in their mind stream then that will create the causes for them to have wisdom and compassion and a perfect human rebirth pretty soon. Okay, so anybody who wants to, you can meet outside, and we're going to then circumambulate. And while we're doing that, you know, dedicate all the merit that you've created by coming to this class, taking the test, helping with the test, meditating on the topic, being part of this worm incident event. And I really appreciate all of your energy, time for this whole module, and I'll be cycling back through this DB some point. I'm not sure when I'm due back, but I'm due back, so I'll see you hopefully then.